Hi, I'm Katelle Le Goulven, and this is Mission to Change, the show where I hear from people who turn business into a force for good and learn about the journey to make it happen.
I think impact entrepreneurs play an absolutely critical role despite all the hype about ESG. If we only relied on sustainable businesses or only relied on ESG, there's going to be a lot of societal issues. Somebody whose primary goal is profits will not find it worthwhile to prioritize income. ESG is very important, but it leaves behind a lot of holes in what really needs to be done to get the world to where we need.
Throughout this season of Mission to Change, we have dived into the world of impact entrepreneurship. We've looked at the founding of the term social entrepreneur with Bill Drayton. We spoke with practitioners who have scaled their impact by partnering with corporates and governments to create systemic change. In this final episode, we speak with INSEAD Professor Jasjit Singh to help us understand where the movement is at and what the role of social entrepreneurs look like in a world where every corporate talks about doing good.
Hi, my name is Jasjit Singh. I'm a professor of strategy and sustainable development here at INSEAD, and I like to integrate issues related to social and environmental impact in all of my teaching and research that I do here.
Jasjit has been accompanying social entrepreneurs through INSEAD dedicated programs for many years, focusing on sustainability strategy, inclusive business models, impact entrepreneurship, and impact investing. So let's hear some of the key trends emerging from this space from his perspective.
I would say two trends are particularly noteworthy. The first is that in the past, social entrepreneurs used to be a completely different community from the business people. And it used to be a very niche community, which was not always talking so much with the mainstream business. While now these communities are coming more and more together. And the second trend, which is related to the first, is in the past, it was assumed that social entrepreneurship is something that you do when you're willing to take major compromises in your careers, in financial terms, and in terms of building a business. It's always going to be one of a life of hardship for yourself and your employees, while now people are more and more eager to say how they can build businesses that have a very strong impact mission, in a way that even financially, they are meant to be scalable businesses with a potential to become a mainstream and go big.
So the first trend that you mentioned is, you know, this two world of social entrepreneurship and corporates coming closer together. And why is this? Why did that happen?
I would say more and more people looking for business careers are looking for opportunities in which they can have meaningful careers where they're making a positive difference to the world. However, these people have goals which are somewhat different from the past social entrepreneurs in terms of what they are seeking for themselves and their lifestyles, their families, their companies, their employees, their ambition. The missions are much bigger. The ambitions are much bigger to reach much bigger scale and to build really viable, robust businesses that are solving the big problems at scale. So that ambition has gone up. And one way to meet that ambition is indeed to build businesses that are financially more viable, because the reliance on grants and concessionary funding is seen as something that holds you back in terms of being able to scale and ultimately have more impact as well.
Yeah. And more now we talk about, you know, impact entrepreneurship and less about social entrepreneurship. Why is that?
So I would say there are two reasons, one of which is very often when you use the word social entrepreneurship, people assume that it excludes entrepreneurship on environmental dimension. And given how big environmental has become in global debates in recent years, that has been one reason to replace the word with impact. But the other reason is very often people associate social entrepreneurship essentially as building businesses that are not financially very robust. So they're putting impact first to an extent that they might not be financially viable. They might not have the most sophisticated business strategies, business models, and so on. And the word impact somehow has come to be associated with more mainstream conversations around making a positive difference. And so increasingly, if you look at the large companies today that are trying to integrate impact into their business, they would use the word impact entrepreneurship rather than social entrepreneurship.
In terms of some of the definitions I would like to know what's your view on, you know, how broad this spectrum is for social entrepreneurship. In the original definition that Bill Drayton also gave us, there was a strong focus on being profitable. So what's your view here? I mean, does it even matter to consider to look at that? Is it something we should be considering?
So there is certainly a spectrum and distinction between different kind of ventures who we could call impact entrepreneurship ventures. And the difference very often is indeed in the aspiration they have on the financial side. Some of them would target at least having enough revenues to meet break-even, while others are having the ambition of being as competitive as mainstream enterprises. And I think that's where some of that distinction comes. So you would see ventures, and that's why I like to use two different terms. Now, these terms, it's not a standard methodology, but in my definition, I reserve the word social enterprise for somebody who's willing to put depth of impact ahead of breadth of impact, right? So they are deliberately reaching out to either beneficiary segments or the kind of problems where it's very hard to expect that you will ever give the kind of returns that mainstream businesses can give. At the same time, the ambition is, can you come up with at least break-even business models so that that allows you to scale without having to rely year on year on philanthropic grants? But the other term that I use to contrast with social enterprise is impact business. And when I use the word impact business, I usually refer to business which has a very strong sense of mission, to a point where, yes, they are seeking to be as competitive as mainstream business on commercial and financial performance, but for them, the mission and the impact is not a means to an end. It is also an end in itself. So they, in a way, have dual goals, which of course makes it even more challenging. And in my view, both have a very important role to play, and these roles are complementary. Some of them, as I said, are focusing more on the depth of impact, which is typically what I call social enterprises, while others are focused on the scale and breadth of impact, which, to be honest, sometimes can come at the expense of depth of impact. And even if it doesn't, sometimes it can come at the expense of not reaching out the hardest to serve segments. Think, for example, farmers. So you could imagine that there is a social enterprise, and one we worked with in Myanmar is called Proximity Designs, which is explicitly going after smallholder farmers. These farmers are most remote, the least connected to the markets. Their education levels might be, minimal. They might have smaller plots of land, and it's just harder to serve them and to expect to have a business model that will make as much money as your mainstream businesses in the agribusiness. At the same time, it's a very important segment which will be left behind if we were only building businesses which are saying, yes, we are trying to help farmers, but we will only help farmers in ways in which we can still give investors the same kind of returns they expect from mainstream ventures.
That's the illustration for what a social and impact enterprise will look like in there, whereas an impact business would maybe provide some service without targeting that segment. Is that correct?
So yes, if you're talking in the social dimension, very often the impact business might choose not to go after the smallest farmers. They might still serve farmers that are relatively low income, but they might be able to crack a business model for serving those farmers that can scale and give returns that are, you know, competitive in terms of market returns. So that's also impact. That's just impact for a segment that is not as hard to serve as the absolutely smallest, poorest farmers who have no resources, no education, very remote, maybe not even access to energy and so on.
So you talk for this impact business also about the duality of goals, right? Which you don't have for the social enterprise. You basically have like one main goal. For impact business, you have two. And so strategically, isn't that like harder to do than to go with like a social enterprise way? I mean, what are the key motivations between getting to one or another here?
So one of the challenges indeed in building an impact business is that you have to find a business model where the impact and the business side are perfectly aligned. And that perfect alignment might be practical in some settings, might not be practical in others. So to give an example, let's talk about impossible foods, right? I would consider impossible foods an impact business because the whole reason for it to be founded was that a view that if we can replace animal-based meat with plant-based meat, that is otherwise, tasting as well, and has the same kind of health benefits that meat eaters seek, then that's a product that can be sold at scale. And at the same time, doing so will significantly have an environmental impact. So if you can find a way to convince people, hundreds of millions of people around the world, to eat plant-based meat, that has a massive impact on the environmental dimension. And as long as your product is good and you've figured out a business model, which is what Impact Foods is striving to do, yes, you can also become millionaire or billionaire in the process of building a business like that.
And in terms of the motivation for a founder to go one route or the other, I mean, does that depend on the particular challenge, on the particular industries? Are there particular characteristics that would push you to go more toward like a social enterprise route or an impact business? What are the main driver, for a founder to go after one or another?
So very often what I would say is going in the direction of social enterprise very often comes hand in hand with interest in a particular segment that looks quite different from the others, or a particular problem that is a very critical problem, but a problem that would vary across different contexts. So the perfect solution for that would have to be context specific or beneficiary segment specific. So it's very hard for it to say, okay, yes, we built the perfect solution and the same solution can now be scaled globally because there will be compromises involved. While in an impact business, you typically are looking at an important issue, but you're looking at an important issue which is also a need that's much bigger and much more uniform. For example, we talked about environmental impact and emissions. If you're building a technology that can help reduce emissions, let's say carbon capture. I mean, that's a naturally scalable thing. It's not dependent on the context. While if you're building something that's specific to the smallholder farmers in Myanmar, the maximum you would scale is all the smallholder farmers in the Myanmar region, because once you cross that, the same business model may or may not apply, and there might be limits to how far you can grow in doing that.
What I'm hearing is that some of the reasons are very technical and practical based on the particular challenge that one is trying to address rather than on the, purpose dimension of the initial motivation of the person.
So, of course, some of this depends on the purpose and the causes that the person cares about. So, for example, if I cared a lot about the children that live in slums and to improve the lives of these children, then I start with the problem of, okay, what are the barriers to these children getting adequate education and ultimately going into making reasonable livelihoods? And that might be very specific to that segment. If I was looking at the question of food wastage in general and what are technological solutions to convert food into fuel, for example, that might be something that's much more general and perhaps scalable beyond just the garbage being created in a large city like Mumbai, right? So very often, if somebody is very passionate about a particular segment, they might choose to be embedded in that segment and say, how do I keep on working on improving lives of people that I care about in this segment and dedicate their life to be in that particular community? And that's what a lot of social entrepreneurs end up doing, while many others are saying, no, what are the biggest global problems where I can have, I can move the needle at scale?
In recent years, there's been an increased focus on sustainability, ESG, and impact in the corporate and finance world, from private equity to large multinationals to SMEs. The question at the front of my mind is, where do impact entrepreneurs fit into this new picture? And more fundamentally, do we still need them if every organization is claiming to have a positive impact?
I think impact entrepreneurs play an absolutely critical role, despite all the hype about ESG and sustainable business going mainstream. And it's important in particular to differentiate between, you know, and I'm using my terms here, these are not, you know, necessarily standardized terms, but when I talk about a spectrum of approaches of finding an overlap between business and impact, I make the distinction between three kind of businesses. We've already talked about two, which is social enterprises and impact businesses. And both of these, I would say, involve impact entrepreneurs setting them up, because the mission is a very important driver. But the third bucket is sustainable business, or in the financial world, you would call it ESG. And this is the bucket where the mainstream businesses are becoming more and more sensitive to societal trends, recognizing that it is no longer possible to build businesses which only rely on price as a signal of value and only focus on very narrow metrics of profitability and doing well commercially. At a minimum, they'll start thinking, hey, how we look at environmental and social issues is a very important driver of my risk management strategy. So, for example, if you know, the society is becoming increasingly sensitive to let's say gender equality and inclusion issues, or if the next generation cares a lot about social justice, or there is a chance that a few years from now we are going to have a carbon tax, not taking these trends into account would be foolish business strategy. But the important thing is, typically in conversations about sustainable business, the primary goal is still the business side. And so the impact side comes into a conversation not as a primary goal, but as something that needs to be done, because not doing so is either a risk or a lost opportunity for the business, which is great. I mean, so it's a good thing that increasingly businesses are becoming sensitive to it, but we have to recognize that if we only relied on sustainable businesses or only relied on ESG, there's going to be a lot of societal issues that will go ignored. Somebody whose primary goal is profits will not find it worthwhile to prioritize impact. So the kind of impact that we talk about when we talk about sustainable business or mainstream conversations of sustainability and ESG is very important, but it leaves behind a lot of holes in what really needs to be done to get the world to where we need to be.
And so do I hear you correctly that sustainable business are basically dealing with risk management, right? Risk management and adjustment of the business model vis-a-vis societal trends, where, you know, and not really about generating a positive impact?
Well, so I wouldn't just say risk management. As I said, it can also be an opportunity, right? So if you think that billions of people around the world that used to live in extreme poverty are now at income levels which are, you know, what is commonly referred to as level two and not level one. What that means is they are now in the range of $2 to $8 a day of spending in purchasing power parity terms rather than $0 to $2, it becomes possible to reach these people out through business models. So in principle, you know, if you're a large multinational company and you're not tapping into a market like Vietnam because most of the people are in that segment, but your business model is optimized for people sitting in the US or Western Europe, then there's the opportunity to innovate in a way that you bring products and services that improve the lives of these people. And yet it's a market for you. So this is not just risk, it's also opportunity. But the point is, anytime you evaluate that, you would run it through your usual analysis of, is there a business case? Would this project be, at least in the long term, a net present value project? And if it's not, then you're not going to do it if you're a business. And it would be, I think, naive to expect that businesses would take on projects that they know are massively negative NPV projects.
So does it mean we are really at a moment where collaboration with corporates can really help us, you know, move to a system change? Because this is what we discussed also in the previous episode, right? Does that mean that now the idea of changing systems is something that seems possible given these trends?
So in the end, the thing to always keep in mind is, you know, what are the strengths? What are you good at? How do you contribute to overall society in terms of things that you bring to the table, and what do you need, right? So if you're an impact entrepreneur that's working outside the corporate world, yes, you might be very passionate, and yes, you might be willing to invest in really risky business models to do certain things. So that's what you're good at. In a way, you're the R&D engineer of society for social innovation. But just like, you know, the R&D engineers normally in companies are not the people who ultimately take the products to market and scale them up, similarly, very often, impact entrepreneurs are not the right people then to build strong businesses to commercialize some of those solutions, even after those solutions have been found. So there is a natural transition for that. Then, you know, of course, very often funding is a gap. And typically we talk about, hey, you know, maybe an impact investor would fund you and so on. But those kind of funds, end of the day, are still limited. If a business sees a potential in an idea that they think somebody has de-risked to some extent, they might be willing to invest in the idea and to help you build an organization which they either partner with or potentially even ultimately make you a part of a broader organization, which comes with its own challenges. But it's not two different worlds, because end of the day, businesses are also looking to engage in the impact space, but they are looking to engage it in a way that doesn't bring in too much early stage risk for them. And once they see the potential, you know, they might be natural partners in many cases.
Do you have a good example of such a partnership that has worked?
So, you know, one of the most well-documented cases in this space is Ben & Jerry's, a company that right from the start was very mission-driven. It was a social enterprise, and then it went public. At the same time, it was struggling to be a financially successful company after it went public. And what ended up happening was it ended up being acquired by Unilever, right? So an interesting question to ask is, the fact that Unilever took over Ben & Jerry's, is that a good outcome or a bad outcome? And we can make arguments on both sides. On the positive side, once Ben & Jerry's was inside Unilever, Unilever is able to bring in, you know, its financial resources, its skill in scaling up things, running efficient supply chains, going to market, branding, and all of that. And Ben & Jerry has really flourished as a brand, as a business, inside Unilever. So you can say, well, Unilever allowed a mission-driven business to scale up, right? And build a business where maybe, you know, their sourcing is ethical, they treat their employees well, they're still engaging in programs where they engage with their communities. They're even willing to take, you know, difficult political positions, as we've seen, that many other companies might not be able to. Okay, so what's the downside? Well, the downside is, if you talk to people that were very passionate about Ben & Jerry's originally, they'll say there was a little bit lost. The DNA is not exactly the same, because there are boundaries to how much activism you can do, how strong a position you can take on societal issues. And we see that happening right now in terms of some conflicts that have recently emerged within Unilever in positions that Ben & Jerry's has taken on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Others at the same time would say, well, look, but actually the fact that Ben & Jerry's became a part of Unilever allowed Unilever to take some of the best practice from Ben & Jerry and also inject it in other parts of its business. You know, it can be food brands, ice cream brands, or even beyond in how they work with employees, how they work with their supply chains, and so on. But I think it goes back to there very often being a trade-off between the breadth of impact and the depth of impact. Is it better to have Ben & Jerry's as a relatively small, you know, community-driven social enterprise, or is it better to have Ben & Jerry's as a global brand that is 10, 20, 30 times large, is still, you know, a role model within its segment, but perhaps, you know, there is a little bit of a compromise because there are limits on how much it would be able to do inside a large multinational company.
In your classes, in MBA class or master in management, in terms of just telling them that there are different ways of having an impact, and showing them that spectrum that you just shared with us, so that you know there is room for everybody, from creating your own social enterprise to trying to change like a large business so that it becomes sustainable from within.
Okay, so for me, one of the key points is this notion of intentionality, right? The first question to ask is, what do you want to achieve in your career and in your life, right? So if it's just about money, fine, power to you, please go ahead, at least, you know, follow the rules and don't break any laws and stay out of jail and pay your taxes. But then the second question is, there's a segment, some of which, you know, already think like that when they're students, others who come back and start thinking like that 10, 15 years into their careers on, yeah, money is great, but there has to be more to life than money. And one way I can feel that I'm really having a fulfilling career is making a positive contribution to the world. And so the main point of discussion to me then is to not fall into the trap of thinking of making a positive contribution to the world means giving up everything that you're doing, completely ignoring all the skills you have, you know, just moving to some low-income country, go to the villages and start living in the community start from scratch to have a life of impact. You know, it's more important to say, okay, now that I'm thinking about the impact that I want to have, let me revisit what I'm doing. And from what I have in terms of the job that I have, the experience that I have, the skills I have, what would the best path look like if I want to make the most positive contribution to the world? And that best path for a lot of people might be actually staying exactly where they are and doing exactly the job they're doing, but just doing it with a very different mindset of saying, okay, if I adopted the mindset in which one of my goals now is making a positive contribution, what could I do? And that's a very different mindset from having a conversation where you just say, okay, having impact means giving up everything and moving to the middle of Nepal, as John Wood did when he set up his nonprofit Room to Read, that I use as a case study in my course. Because that way of thinking leads 95% of the people to do nothing, right? 5% of the people might take that big plunge and might even then not necessarily achieve their full potential. And the remaining 95% might say, that's too big a leap for me to take. So, you know, I'll think about it another day. I think a much more productive conversation is to say, from what you do, can you do better for the world? While, of course, keeping in mind very importantly, that is this incremental change, or do I still have an eye on what's happening at the systems level? Am I leading to some unintended consequences in the process of feeling good about, you know, doing a little bit of CSR projects here or philanthropy there and so on? If you have genuine intentionality, then as long as there's the humility to learn, to listen, and to continuously improve, there's always things that you would be able to do better. The other piece in all of this is, and we haven't talked about this, but I think regulation is a very important piece in all of this as well, right? So the way, you know, I think of regulation when I talk to people, the link between business and regulation is, if you think of impact entrepreneurs, and, you know, in my view, even people trying to change large companies from the inside with a genuine sense of mission are impact entrepreneurs. The question becomes, how can we help impact entrepreneurs inside the large companies do better? And the answer very often is that, well, this is where the role of institutions like business schools is important, which is, if we are creating awareness of the societal needs, if we are creating pressures in which the regulators are more aware, the customers are more aware, the employees of tomorrow are more aware, there will naturally be a pressure on businesses to reform. Once that pressure comes, you know, there will be a business case for impact, right? So the business case doesn't come from vacuum. Business case comes from all the forces that a business faces. And those forces are shaped by the people. And many of those people are people that are going through business school. So I think all of this is, in the end, interrelated.
Jasjit is a seasoned researcher on impact and has taught hundreds of students about how to scale it. But beyond frameworks and methodologies, he reminds us that there is something personal about making a difference.
All of us have these moments where we think that, you know, what we are doing perhaps is simply not the right way to make a positive difference, and then you need to do something entirely different. A tendency, for example, you know, before my PhD, I was working in consulting. A tendency many of us have is, okay, well, consulting has no impact, so I'm going to, you know, take a sabbatical for consulting and then do something for a nonprofit somewhere, and that's somehow going to change the world. And, you know, certainly some people manage to make a positive difference like that. But, you know, when I took a month off to go to Mumbai and volunteer in some nonprofits, first I struggled because I couldn't figure out what to offer to the nonprofits that I was randomly knocking at the doors of. And then finally, a friend of mine sat me down and saying, who was running her nonprofit, saying, okay, but you used to be a computer scientist, so you can do programming, right? Why don't you come and help me get some of the software for accounting to work in my on my office PC? Because that actually will be very meaningful for us. And that was a little bit of an eye-opening moment for me, which is, I was good at computer science. It just took me 2 weeks to help set up their accounting system, something they'd been struggling with for more than a year. And setting that up helped them for many years. So even if I was not directly involved in, you know, seeing the faces of their beneficiaries or feeling very good about, you know, feeling the so-called warm glow of being out there and helping people, there was an impact from the fact that I had helped an organization that was doing good work set up their accounting system, right? And I think that's the lesson, which is, what do you do? There is always a way in which you build, you know, from your skills, from your job, and start from there.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Mission to Change, a podcast by the INSEAD Hoffman Global Institute for Business and Society in collaboration with Intent. If you liked what you heard, please follow, download, and subscribe to the show. Our podcast was created and produced by Human Humans. Original sound, music, and mixing by Palomino. Coordination, research, and script editing by Isabel Stark. You can find me on LinkedIn at Ketel Gulven, where you can leave me a message about what you liked and what you learned.